Almost one-third of all injuries that occur in childhood are sports-related injuries. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. We'll be talking about youth sports injuries with our guests today, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Do you have any questions about treating athletic injuries in children? What physical therapy questions do you have for them? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or by posting on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. You can also send us an email, and that's to ideas@wpr.org. Jill and Lori, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Hello.
And you came in over spring break, Jill?
Yes. Is it spring break? I wondered. There was hardly anyone on campus. I thought it's spring break. That's why you're dressed like this.
she's dressed casually.
Very casual. It's casual Monday.
Right. At least let them know I have clothes on.
Oh, yeah. She's dressed. And she's wearing appropriate Badger colors.
I am.
Badger Sports Medicine. Go Badgers.
Yes, exactly. It was a very exciting weekend for the Badgers.
What a great weekend.
Very exciting for the Badgers. So when we're talking about injuries for kids who participate in sports, are there specific injuries that you see?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if you were in my house last night, my 17-year-old came back from a weekend soccer tournament complaining, are you ready for this? Wrist pain, forearm pain, ankle pain, knee pain, and rib pain. My daughter, who danced all weekend, is complaining of foot pain, a possible stress fracture. And then I have another kid who fell playing soccer who's all beat up. So, every sport comes with a whole laundry list of things from overuse injuries to acute injuries from contact or collision sports.
Right. Yeah, I had one daughter play basketball and lacrosse yesterday. Yeah. She seems to be pretty good, though. She got up this morning. I wasn't complaining too much.
Well, you know, and in Wisconsin, when you have outdoor sports where the season is so short that they pack so many games into a weekend. I have a weekend this spring where my 11-year-olds have a soccer game in Milwaukee and a soccer game in Appleton later the same day.
Wow.
Trying to just jam everything in. And so those things, the kids get tired, they get fatigued, and they're more prone to injury.
And the other issue is if they take that outdoor sport and they play it inside, for example, my daughter had lacrosse practice inside on a very different surface than they're used to playing on. And then all of a sudden they take it outside, it's a different surface, different shoe wear. That's also a variable that you have to consider.
Yeah. And they're not injuries that only affect kids when they're kids. There was a recent study that came out in the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy who looked at 100 athletes between ages of 15 and 26, and they had sustained an injury anywhere from 3 to 10 years earlier. It was a knee injury specifically. And they looked at them now and they compared them to age-matched controls. And they found that those who had been injured had higher fat mass 3 to 10 years later. You know, the supposition is that it's due to decreased activity. Those who had the ability to maintain a higher level of activity had lower fat mass. But, you know, already 3 to 10 years later, we're seeing people gaining weight potentially because of activity changes due to those injuries. So they can have a lifetime effect.
And we know with ACLs, if you tear your anterior cruciate ligament in your knee, which people seem to be doing at a younger and younger age, approximately 8 to 10 years after you tear your ACL, even if you've had it reconstructed, you've had surgery, you've had good rehab, you're more predisposed to have arthritis in that knee than if you didn't tear your ACL. So now you're talking about kids who are in high school who maybe at age 15 tear their ACL, and by age 25, when you should still be incredibly active, they already have early onset arthritis. So that's also probably a factor that causes people to modify their activity.
Mm-hmm. Are kids maybe just doing too much?
I think it's too much and too soon.
Okay.
And I think it's too much, too soon, and too specialized. Kids have a tendency to select a sport or have early sport specialization much sooner now than we've seen in the past. And we know there's a correlation with early sport specialization and injury. And I think probably what happens is it's you get into the incredible overuse injuries because you don't use your body differently. Kids need to do different activities, different movements. They need to stress their body differently in order to stay healthy. So if they only play one sport all year round, they're not changing how they stress their body, and they're more predisposed to injury. The other thing where I think we run into trouble with this is if you select a sport before you kind of go through puberty, you can end up with what we call a sport somatype mismatch. So if you think about the girl who chooses gymnastics, she likes to do gymnastics, and then at age 12 or 13, she hits a growth spurt, and she's 5'9". There are no 5'9 gymnasts.
No.
And so for her to try and keep up with shorter girls who have their center masses closer to the ground, she may be more predisposed to injury.
Mm-hmm. So when you said puberty. So mm-hmm. are you talking about high school is a good time to specialize, or even that's too early?
So interestingly, what they have found with most college athletes is they were not specialized in one sport. So they most of them did not specialize until they committed to play their college sport. And we've actually looked at this a little bit at the University of Wisconsin in our athletic department, and the majority of our athletes were multi-sport athletes up until they came to college. We also are looking at if there's a correlation between early sport specialization and how they get injured at the university level as well. So those are things that we're considering and looking in, but the majority of our athletes overwhelmingly were multi-sport athletes.
Great. Well, thanks for that information, Jill. Let's go to the phones now. We've had Karen from Belgium waiting. Hi, Karen. What's your question?
Hi. This is not a youth injury, actually. I'm at the other end of the spectrum.
No, it's okay. So are we.
No.
Or at least my sister.
Hey, oh.
I'm 74, and I'm very active. I play golf in the summer and garden and took up curling this fall.
Good for you.
So, but I had, in November of 2015, I was having shoulder issues, and I had surgery. And he said that he cleaned out debris and that I had a slap tear.
Mm-hmm.
And he cut the tendon, mm-hmm. which he said was recommended mm-hmm. for anybody over 50.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to my OT. I had had rotator cuff surgery on the other arm, and I had worked with her and was very happy. And so I did, you know, my exercises and everything. And then come spring, I started playing golf. And then in the fall, I do yoga and weight machines at the Y. And when I started yoga, I noticed that I really didn't have strength in that arm, like to hold it up in poses. And I started on weight machines, and that arm's very weak. I still can't sleep on that side. So my question is, you know, is this an age thing? Can I still strengthen it?
No, it's not an age thing.
Is it your dominant shoulder? Which shoulder?
I'm right-handed.
And this was your right shoulder?
No, it was my left.
Okay. All right. No, you should be able to strengthen that yet. Do you know what they did in the surgery? They repaired the slap tear. They took out the debris.
They took out the debris. He said he cut the tendon.
So he did a
biceps
tenosis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He said you may end up with a Popeye.
Yep.
But so, okay. I did not.
Okay.
And so I guess my question is, with working at the Y on the weight machines, you know, I get to a point where it starts to fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What motions fatigue? What kind of things are you doing that fatigue?
They're like bicep curls.
Yeah, well, your biceps was cut, so.
Yeah. And then there's one where I hold my arms out and bring, you know, the weight comes in. Just pretty much anything.
Are you doing any rotator cuff strengthening? I'm sure you're familiar with that because of your other shoulder. Are you doing something specifically for your rotator cuff?
You know, I had that like 4 years ago. I really don't.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Well, that's where you need to go.
It sounds to me like you're doing things with kind of a longer lever. And I think what we probably need to focus on is getting those small shoulder stabilizers, your rotator cuff muscles, kind of woken up a little bit and focus on those first before we add kind of a weight to a longer lever. So you're probably done seeing your therapist, but I would suggest you go back and see her since you have a good relationship with her and say, you know, I need a crash course in getting specific strengthening exercises for the shoulder and one or two visits and things that you can do at the gym. You're very very capable, it sounds like, and you could be well on your way.
Okay,
we want you to shoot par.
Exactly. Need to shoot par. My game was just awful last time.
I know, but
this is the reason.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you can always blame it on your shoulder.
That's
if
right,
nothing
Karen.
Else.
Exactly. Well, good luck, Karen. Thank you so much for calling. Do you have a question for our physical therapy experts? Well, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email, and that would be to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take our next call. We've got Lisa calling from Madison. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Yeah, this is another non-youth question. I recently received a recommendation from a podiatrist that I should invest in an orthotic, custom-made orthotic, for arch support primarily. And, of course, this is not an inexpensive item. I'm just
Indeed.
Curious what you would recommend that I inquire or research to make sure that this is worth doing and won't, you know, alleviate
sure.
conditions
that
aggravate others.
Yeah. That's a that's a great question. What sent you to the podiatrist in the first place?
Oh, well, a lot of sort of non-specific foot.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I would, if I were you, I would try an off-the-shelf before I'd spend any money on a custom orthosis. There are a lot of very good off-the-shelf $50 or $55 orthotics that I would try before I invested in a custom orthosis.
Right, and you can go to a store that usually has a variety of these different brands, different lengths. They can be full length, they can be three-quarter length, they're made out of different materials, and you can try them in your shoes and see what you think. Like, this feels terrible, this feels great. The last thing you want to do is spend a fortune on an orthotic and get them and hate them. There's a number of people who can't stand having anything in their shoe. It makes their feet hurt more. So we almost always recommend that people start with an off-the-shelf orthotic, see if it gives you any relief, and then you can tweak it from there. You can continue to replace those if they're working. If you need a little bit more customization, then you can say, well, this gets me partway there, but I need a little more. And then you can think about the custom orthotic down the road if that seems like the right direction for you.
But I would go to a running store, something like that, that specializes in this, that has a variety of different orthotics that you can try in your shoes. Bring a couple different pair of shoes with you.
Yeah, REI also has a variety of those.
REI.
Any of those stores.
Yep.
Okay, great. Well, good luck with that, Lisa. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Do you have a question for them? Well, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn talks to an environmental law expert about the history of the Environmental Protection Agency. That's at 2 o'clock on the Ideas Network. And right now, we are talking about physical therapy, and we're going to go right back to the phones. We've got Louise in Dodgeville. Hi, Louise.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What can we help you with?
I have a question. I work on a dairy farm, and it's calf season.
Adorable, but heavy, I bet.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so when bottle feeding the calves, you know, you kind of can do it from the front. I end up usually kind of standing to the side of them, behind them. You know, you're bending forward at the hips, you know, putting the bottle in their mouth. So it's kind of this position, you know, I try to shift my weight, bend my knees. But you're basically standing and then hinged, you know, over.
Right.
And then having to hold yourself in that position.
Right. And hold a bottle. Mm-hmm. And hold a bottle still.
With a wiggly calf.
Exactly. So I find that I get my low back gets really tight. So I'm not sure if it's my low back or my hamstrings or my butt muscles or what.
It is all of the above, Louise.
Right.
it's all that. Well, it sounds like you have worked pretty hard to try to find positions that work for you. Sitting is not a possibility?
No, it would be more like doing like a Heisman Trophy kind of pose with them.
That's so cute.
But I, you know, it kind of, you have to find what works for you and the calf. And I just fine standing works for me.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, then the things that we would say would be put your feet in stride.
Yes. Stagger your stance.
Yeah. Stagger your stance. Shift your weight frequently. And if you can, try to move. So rather than standing in that static position, if you can just think you've got a little song in your head and sort of bring your hips down, almost like you're going to sit and stand back up again. Mm-hmm, swing them to the side a little bit. Swing them to the other side a little bit. Keep moving so that you're engaging your muscles differently and changing your relationship to gravity.
Yeah.
So that you're not in a static position. And then and when you finish with that one, what you want to do is go the other direction. You want to arch yourself back the other direction, hands on your hips, arch back so that you move your spine the other direction.
Got it.
You know, and then next year, as you're approaching calf season, you may want to get yourself in a strengthening program where you do some specific strengthening for your hamstrings, your glutes, and your low back muscles so that you're ready for it. The problem is if you get in that position and calf makes a sudden move or you have to make a sudden move, then all of a sudden, bam, you hurt your back.
Right.
And then you're really in trouble. So getting yourself prepared for that ahead of time, since you know what's coming, I think would be useful.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank you for calling, Louise, and good luck with that calving.
That's such a Wisconsin question.
It is.
Like, that's just fabulous.
Yeah, you would not get that in, I don't know, California.
Right, exactly. Because we are the dairy state.
We are the dairy state, even though California tries to be.
Right. Yeah, there are no cows in California. We know that, right? All right, let's go back to the phones. We've got Larry in Rockford, Illinois. Hi, Rockford. Hi, Larry. What can we do for you?
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I've been coaching for over 40 years. I've been very successful and had a lot of fun. And I'm concerned about trends that I see more and more of lately. One is kids are playing too much. It's not enough for them to just be on one basketball team. They have to be on three basketball teams.
Yep.
It's not enough to play one game in a day. They have to play seven. And these travel teams, I think, are just really doing a disservice to kids. The other thing I'm concerned about is cold stretching. Coaches will have their kids stretch ice cold, no warm-up. I've never had a kid pull a muscle or get a knee injury, and I never have had them stretch. I always have them slowly jog and then gradually build up to a run, and then we go play.
Yeah, we like to say warm up to stretch, don't stretch to warm up.
Right.
So I agree. You need a little bit of blood flow before you do some stretching.
Right.
Absolutely. And you're preaching to the choir when you were talking to us about these overscheduling of kids. I wholeheartedly agree. Definitely.
Right. Yeah. Too much. And you're right. Part of this, I know, comes down to space. So, again, you have time limited, you're weather limited, you have space limited, and that, you know, you have gyms or whatever, and so they're available on certain days. So you schedule these kids to play, you know, seven basketball games in a weekend, and that's no good. I agree with you on the stretching. You don't stretch cold. It sounds like you use more of a dynamic warm-up,
right,
which is really what we emphasize. And then if anyone has specific muscle groups that are tight or that are important for whatever the sport or activity is, you can do some focal stretching in that area, but only after your good dynamic warm-up.
Right. If you ever watch any of the Badgers play, they always do some sort of dynamic warm-up, and then they might play a little bit, do some drills, and then they step over, like Lori said, and do any static stretching of any muscles that they feel need to be lengthened. And then before they perform, they again do some dynamic movement, go through some plays, things like that, because we know static stretching immediately before performance actually impedes your performance.
Correct.
Okay. Well, thanks for those comments, Larry. We appreciate that. Let's go to Shannon in Green Bay. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Okay. Kind of a long story, but I'll try and shorten it. About 2 years ago, I hurt my wrist at work. I'm a firefighter, and I also do CrossFit. So I hurt my wrist during some training. Went to the doctor. He said it was probably a strained tendon in my wrist. So I wore a brace for a couple of months, took it easy, and it really seemed to get better. Went back to all of my regular activities, and then about 6 months ago, it really started hurting again. Usually after a workout, and in CrossFit, we use barbells a lot. So there's a lot of, bending your wrist backwards.
Yeah.
And so finally, after about 6 months, I went in, I got an MRI, and they said it's possible that I have a partially torn ligament in my wrist.
Is it your TFCC? So did they say your TFCC?
They didn't specify.
Okay.
One. It's kind of on the top. I'm kind of going into my hand a little bit.
Is it on the pinky side?
I think it's more kind of middle.
Okay.
Middle. So I got a cortisone shot at the time, and it's been, I got that done early January, and it's just now I'm starting to get a little more pain. It's starting to wear off a little bit. But my question is, I also think I have tennis elbow. I have pain in my forearm, the inside of my elbow. Now my shoulder's starting to hurt, and my underneath my right scapula is always really tight. So now I'm wondering, is it possible that I really just have tennis elbow, which is causing my wrist to hurt? Or is it more?
No, you probably started with the wrist problem, and then you changed how you did things, and you gave yourself tennis elbow, shoulder pain, and scapular pain.
Right.
Probably worked the other way. So have you seen anyone for this other than a doctor who gave you cortisone?
Well, she was, I saw a hand surgeon. I went to physical therapist first. I did that for several months, and I did get, I got needled in my forearm because that had just become rock hard and painful all the time, and that helped temporarily. And then he did needle my shoulder blade area at one point, and you know that felt better
right.
for a little
but,
while.
Yeah, but you're not getting to the source of the problem. The source of the problem is your wrist and your wrist mechanics. Did you see a certified hand specialist?
Yes, I think she is certified.
The therapist, you mean?
Oh, no.
He's the surgeon.
No, the surgeon.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking about the therapist. Find yourself a certified hand therapist who can really look at your wrist. I know if you came in to see me, you know, I'm have some comfort with wrist, but when it gets to this level of complexity,
correct,
with this partial tear, I would want you to see someone who specializes in this.
And the demand of your job and your activity level. Yeah. So a certified hand therapist can either be an occupational therapist or a physical therapist, but it's somebody that really specializes in hand, wrist, and upper quarter, which it sounds like is probably what you need. So some of the things that you were, I'm sure the physical therapist did the absolute best of their ability, but it sounds to me like you're not getting better. And like Lori said, you're not getting to kind of the root of the problem. And there's so many ligaments in the wrist, and it can be so problematic. And you need your wrist to function.
Right. And it sounds like you're heading the wrong direction with getting progressive elbow pain, shoulder pain, scapular pain. So yeah, look for someone. They'll have CHT behind their name, certified hand therapist.
Okay.
So
the surgeon recommends surgery, of course, and she said she wants to go in with the camera. If she doesn't find a tear, then that would be a month off work. Mm-hmm. If she finds a tear, she would repair it at that time, and that's 3 months off work. So do you think I should go ahead with the surgery or see a physical therapist first?
I would see a certified hand therapist first and exhaust that before you go to surgery. And if you still need surgery, then just think about what much better shape your muscles, your flexibility, everything will be post-operatively. It'll make your recovery better. So don't think about it as a waste of time. Think about it as prehab.
Right.
So
an just investment in a better outcome.
Exactly. So I would definitely try a hand therapist first. Make sure you've exhausted everything before you go to surgery.
Okay. Well, thank you for calling, Shannon, and really good luck with that.
Let us know how you do.
Yeah.
That's complicated.
Definitely. Well, let's go to Anita in Ashton, Minnesota. Hi, Anita.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just caught a little bit of the insole discussion.
Yes.
And I just wanted to call with a comment and recommendation. I recently saw a podiatrist, and they took x-rays and said I had, plantar fasciitis and some arthritis in my toes. But my feet had been really killing me. And oftentimes I would wake up and walk like a lot of 90-year-olds I know. So anyway, I went to the podiatrist, and then they sent me to the, to get an orthopedic insole. And I went and, discovered that insurance didn't cover it. It was $500.
Right.
I said, well, I have to think about this. And I went to Schuler's Shoes. I don't know if you have those in Wisconsin, but
Schuler's.
Birkenstock makes a $60 insole, and I had immediate relief.
Perfect.
As soon as I put those in my shoes, and I'm walking like normal without any pain or anything.
Right. That's kind of what we were talking about with Lisa earlier. that it's better to start with a good off-the-shelf orthotic first, and that Birkenstock insert at $60 is kind of right in the price range,
right,
where we were talking, where it's a good, solid, well-designed arch support, but it's not $500.
Right, by a company that makes shoes, which makes sense.
By a company that makes shoes, precisely.
Right.
Yeah.
Another good brand that I personally like is Superfeet.
Yeah.
They come in different, I don't know, rigidity.
Right.
Is that a word?
It is a word.
It is
of
now.
Course it is. Yes. Yeah. Stiffness.
Thank you. Different mm-hmm. stiffness and different
yep.
colors
and different,
mean different
lengths,
things
and different materials for different kinds of activities. There's sport ones. There's ones that have more firmness. I like Sole, S-O-L-E as well.
There you go.
I have some of those.
Okay, there's a couple recommendations for you, Anita. Good luck with that. Let's go to Jessie from Middleton emailed to ask what her daughter should do about Sievers disease.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sadly.
She is currently in a cast, which is going to come off
soon.
What should they do in the short term, and what can they expect? Will this continue to be a problem in the years to come, and how can they prevent it from flaring back up again?
It's interesting that they're casting somebody for Sievers disease.
Can you tell us what
Sievers
that is?
Disease.
Sure. It is calcaneal apophysitis.
Well, that helped.
I know.
Yes, I know.
So you think about the classic thing people know is Osgood Schlatter's, that bump you get on your tibia.
Mm-hmm.
You get the exact same thing where your Achilles tendon inserts in the back of your heel bone. And if it tugs a lot, if you get that tugging and pulling, what happens is your body lays down more bone. So you get pain in the back of your heel right where your Achilles inserts. We commonly see it when people go through a rapid growth spurt. I believe she said her daughter was 12.
Yeah, all of my kids have had it.
Yes, yes.
My
11-year-old has it.
Yeah, she didn't say how old her daughter was.
Okay. But yeah, it's not uncommon. Here, I'm going to tell you a really funny story, and then we'll finish this. So my daughter had Sievers disease, or, this calcaneal irritation. Her Achilles hurt. And so they were running this shuttle run in gym class. And I said, I think we should hold you from that today. I don't think you should participate. And she said, okay, I'll write the note and you will sign it. And I said, that's fine. And she wrote, Sophie can't participate in gym today because of Sievers disease. Like the salad.
Yeah,
and I said, you don't have Sievers disease. Yeah. And it's not a salad. It's Sievers disease.
So anyways. It's interesting that they were casted.
Right.
I haven't ever seen anyone casted for this before. These are usually activity limited things,
right,
just like Osgood Schlatter's. They don't put people in casts because it causes tremendous atrophy, and there's very little downside. It's so unlikely that you would have any long-term repercussions.
Correct.
From this. So you get apophysitis in a number of areas. You get it at the end of your kneecap, called Sindig-Larsson-Johansson's. You get it at the base of your fifth metatarsal, and I forget what it's called. It starts with an I. And you can get iliac apophysitis. You can get them all over your body as you're growing, and they're basically activity limited. When it hurts, you stop. In terms of Jess's question, she should be stretching her Achilles. I'd be doing some deep massage to her Achilles. It hurts like heck, but after about 90 seconds, it doesn't hurt so much anymore. My kids, when they see me coming, they're like, no, yes, little Achilles massage tonight. So that will help, some strengthening and so on, and then just activity limited.
Right. It's usually self-limiting, and it usually, as they kind of get through that part of the growth spurt, things usually settle out.
And you can put in a little heel lift to get them through, to shorten up the Achilles, put a little lift in your shoe, put it in both shoes, don't put it in one, or you make them uneven.
Right.
But then that's, you don't get a lift without stretching.
You earn it. That's
you
right. You have
it.
To earn your lift.
That's right.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, and good luck with that, Jess. Let's go to Leisha in Spring Green. Hi, Leisha.
Hi.
What's your question?
Well, in 2014, I had a total hip replacement of my right hip, and I had I had an excellent surgeon, but my problem with my hip started actually in 1999 at water aerobics, of all things. But anyway, it's progressively got worse until I couldn't handle it anymore, and I had it replaced, and it did really fine. But I am a runner, and I'm trying to. I was wondering what you thought about if I should or how I could possibly get back into doing that. Because I tried the other day, and it's like my center of gravity is off or something. I just can't get that, feeling.
Right.
Can't.
So do you know, did you have an anterior approach or a lateral approach? Do you know where is your...
It's on the side of my hip.
Okay, so she had a lateral approach. Okay.
And...
it's not anterior, no.
Okay. May I ask how old you are?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say that. I'm 66.
Okay. All right. So that's relatively young.
Right. And with a lateral approach...
Yeah, exactly. So sort of my question is, well, how did you get there? How did you get to having a hip replacement, in your early 60s on one side? Both sides are doing the same thing, so...
Oh, I know. And it's weird because, I always had this funny feeling that there was just something different about my right hip because I kind of walked different, you know? I mean, there mm-hmm. was kind of a... There was something different, and I have beginning osteoarthritis in the left hip, but nothing like that, nothing. I mean, I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know.
And what, did the surgeon say anything when he or she looked at it, or did your hip replacement, that there was anything funky other than arthritis?
Oh, no, he said it was the worst he'd ever seen.
Oh, well, huh, for Pete's sake.
So what was your surgeon's advice on running after your hip replacement?
I didn't ask him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't ask, don't tell.
Right. It's better to beg for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Exactly. If it were me and if I were committed to return to running, I would start running in a pool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know what happened with your water aerobics, but, boy, you know, progressive arthritis due to water aerobics.
That seems unusual.
It really seems
without
unusual.
An underlying pathology, sounds like you probably had.
Know when it happened.
Okay.
Because it was all of a sudden. We were doing a thing where you hop with your on one leg and you have the other leg out in front.
Yep.
And then you turn. You know, you'd kind of do a twist. It happened. It just, like, I felt it. You know, it was like something ripped, you know.
Okay. Could have been a labrum.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing, I like your idea of starting with walking or running in the pool. I think that's a great strategy. And I would start with some good stationary biking just mm-hmm. to build up the endurance of your muscles doing something really reciprocal that's non-weight bearing, mm-hmm. non-impact.
Or a cross trainer.
Exactly.
For your weight bearing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I would start with things where you can really control the variables, control the time, control the impact, things like that. And then if I did make it to running outside, I would run on a track or a trail. Probably a track is even better where you can walk and jog on a soft surface and it's very limited where you can say, oh, that's enough, and you're not 2 miles out.
Right. You can walk to your car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, I think I would do all those things. Did you get good rehab? Did you do a lot of strengthening exercises after your total hip replacement?
Oh, yeah. I have no problem with strength.
Good. Okay. So then it's a matter of building up some endurance and getting those things going.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Hopefully everything will work out there, Alicia. Let's go to Ben in Madison. Hi, Ben. What do you have for us today?
Yeah, I was a high school gymnast, and I peeled off the high bar and landed on my neck.
Ooh.
And
ouch.
Had a pretty great tear to my lower back. I was able to compete in the state meet, 2 days later, but it was very painful. And then over the years, I coached the team for 12 years, actively working out with them, and I was always in constant 1, 2 pain, 3, 5, 4, 3. When it got to 9, paralytic pain, I decided to take my own advice and go get prolotherapy. And this was after 20 years in 2003. I was in my early 40s, and I had 6 treatments on my lower back and some on my middle back and on my knee from an old ski injury also in the 80s that started to throb after I thought it was fine and healed. And I felt 25 years old again. Prolotherapy rebuilds collagen in ligaments and tendons that are torn. And it is fantastic.
Okay, well, thanks, Ben. Ladies, what do you think about that?
Well, prolotherapy's been around for quite a while, and there are different kinds of prolotherapy. It's not a one-size-fits-all. So it was...
It's like tissue versus Kleenex.
Tissue versus Kleenex. Thank you for that. Yes,
prolotherapy
exactly.
is tissue.
It is tissue. That's
okay.
Right. So originally, the injections, and I'm not sure what kind of injections Ben had. My guess is that he had autologous blood injections. Yes?
No.
No, he had
saline?
Saline? Sucrose?
Simple. It's not the medical. It's, these are osteopaths, not the MDs want to pull out your blood, spin it out, get white blood cells, and make it really expensive. This is so simple, non-toxic injections that you don't even feel most of them. It's like an
acupuncture. What do they inject?
Ben, what are they injecting?
Sometimes I think it might just be some simple as sugar.
Right,
it causes the body to send in fibroblast cells to areas that don't get blood supply.
Okay,
Yeah, so that was the original prolotherapy was dextrose,
right?
Sugar. Mm-hmm. So it was used to typically in joints that were too mobile, and they wanted them to tighten up, some to increase stability. It was used in the TMJ joints and in your sacroiliac joints to increase stability there. So it's been around for a long time. Some people do really well with that, and some people don't. It's certainly worth a try, but you really need to have the right set of indications for that. And then, as Ben suggested, there's the autologous blood injections, which they use a lot for arthritis in knees and so on, and they use them in tendinopathies as well.
Correct.
So,
okay. Well,
so that's a little bit of prolotherapy.
Right.
It wouldn't be my first go-to intervention for some of these different things, but it's certainly on the list of intervention choices given the right set of indications.
Correct.
And as Ben suggested, it can be very useful and successful.
Well, great. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for letting us know about that. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Najo. I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Do you have a question for them? We actually have an open line, so you can give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, tomorrow at this time, our tax expert is going to be back with us. You're going to have one more chance to ask questions before those taxes are due. So hope you can join us at 11 on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about physical therapy, and we're going to go back to the phones. Let's talk to Kathy in Pelkey, Michigan. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. What's your question?
I have a 15-year-old granddaughter who has been swimming since she was 9, competitively, and she had some issues with her shoulder in December, both shoulders actually, in December. Progressive pain in both shoulders, more pronounced in the left. She did go to physical therapy and was evaluated and did physical therapy for 3 months in the program. She claims that she is better, but she's not swimming. She was instructed not to swim. Her question now is, she has been released. Her question now is, our question now is, should she start swimming with the country club team in the spring, which would be May probably, and they compete through the summer, and then continue with the high school team in September, which is her goal. That's more important. Continue with the high school team in September. What's your thoughts on this?
Those are great questions. So she's been off swimming since December. So she's been off for 3 months now, and her goal is really to be full go in September. I don't know that I'd swim a competitive summer. I would use my summer to work up to being 100% by September. My sister's emphatically shaking
my head yes. You know, once she gets in the pool with that country club team, she's going to feel the pressure to keep up with them. The coach is going to say, do this. There's going to be competitions. She's going to feel that pressure to perhaps swim beyond where she should be swimming at this point in time. So did the physical therapist she was seeing, they released her, but did they give her any advice about return to swimming?
No.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
she
disappointing.
Needs that. Yes, that's very
disappointing.
Because there are really nice return to swimming programs, specifically stroke specific.
Is she in Michigan?
She's in Ohio. She's in Youngstown, Ohio. I can tell you who she's.
Oh, don't do that.
No.
But
I thought not.
Yeah, but also, I don't know if the physical therapist she saw specializes in swimming. But for example, here at UW, we have physical therapists who specialize in swimming. And when they see an athlete coming in with physical problems related to swimming, they do a stroke analysis. We have an underwater camera, and they do a stroke analysis, and they sit down with the athlete, and they say, you know, look what's happening here, look what's happening here. And they correct any stroke problems that have led them to that problem. Or they say, well, look at what you're doing here. Here's how we can modify your stroke and have it still be an effective stroke and have it not stress your shoulder. So if she hasn't had that done and she's a competitive athlete, I would seek out someplace that would do that analysis for her.
Absolutely. And I would slowly work her back into swimming. And there's no reason she can't and shouldn't be doing some cross training opposite days. If she's a 15-year-old girl and she's been swimming pretty hard since she's nine, she needs to get out and do some weight bearing dry land activity for her bone mineral density,
right?
For sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Like what? In what capacity? What would that involve? What could
strength
she get
training?
In?
Strength training. Strength training for sure. And she should really mix it with some impact activity as well.
Yeah, and she should be evaluated for hypermobility. We see so many swimmers who are hypermobile, and that leads them to injuries. So if the physical therapist didn't assess her for overall hypermobility of her joints, that will have implications about what she should and shouldn't do and how it should be done.
Okay, well, thank you, Kathy, for calling, and hopefully you've got a lot of good advice there to give to your granddaughter.
Yeah, I think probably more than she wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
All I want to know is if she should swim this summer.
Her grandma's we could have said yes or no, but it's really not in our DNA.
Yes, well, we don't want that anyway. That's always good advice, ladies. Let's go to Dick in Viroqua. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I've got a knuckle problem.
What did you hit, Dick?
when I was a kid, I hit too many things.
Okay.
But I do have arthritis in my middle finger and the knuckle. And it's a very sporadic kind of thing, but I can be sitting at my desk talking to somebody, or I can be sitting at a table, the supper or whatever, and all of a sudden I get a pain shot into my knuckle, and my hand jerks up. And everybody looks at me like, what's wrong? And it's just very sporadic, but it shoots a pain in there so hard that it just jerks my hand.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds fairly classic of an arthritic joint.
Maybe with a loose body or a little fragment in the joint that gets just in the right place that causes a great deal of pain.
Yep, exactly. If your hand's been in one position for a long period of time, you get to a point where the joint starts screaming, and it can be sudden, or you move it slightly. As Jill said, you might have a little loose body where you catch something or something gets in just the right position. It sends that shooting pain, and then it kind of moves around out of the way, and then you're fine again. You know, in terms of things to do, you know, what we recommend is that people keep their joints as flexible as possible. So you want to make sure that you maintain as much motion in that joint as possible. You know, making fists, opening and closing your fists, keeping your hands strong. By
doing dishes is a really good way.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Right, I heard that one.
Yeah. Well, in defense of that, the warm water.
Right.
The move, squeezing a sponge, grasping, turning things over, it really involves some of the more complicated hand motions that we do in sort of that warm, supportive environment. So we weren't really being facetious.
But if you need practice, you can come to my house.
Yeah, or mine. Yeah, anytime. But, you know, that's kind of what I do. I practice squeezing, keeping my hands strong. And other than that, there's really not a tremendous amount to be done unless it gets to be terribly worrisome. You hear the cure is probably worse than the problem.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, Dick, thanks for the call. We appreciate that. Let's go to Shelley in Madison. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Lori. Lori, this is Shelley from the Adolescent Health Symposium.
Oh, hi, Shelley.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm still spreading
How are
the
you?
Good word about your fabulous work. We love hearing you. So, anyway, and nice to have your sister. It's your sister, right? That's on
hi,
with you?
Shelley. Yes, it's her younger sister.
Thank you for pointing that out. Not that much younger.
I'll have to come out and meet her. I have a couple of questions. And, Lori, you may remember, I had some back injuries. I had some back surgery.
Yes,
and finally now, and it's been like, close to 7 years. Since
it's been a long time.
All the surgery and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You had a cane when I saw you the first time.
Yes. 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 I was on crutches for close to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm trying to get back into more movement, and I have signed up for a Disney 5K and 10K next winter.
Oh, nice.
And so I'm going out. Yeah. And I'm using the Galloway of run 30 seconds, walk 30 seconds, et cetera.
Okay.
But one of the things, I used to do a lot of those like 5 and 10K fun things, but I haven't for years.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that's bothering me is on my right knee,
mm-hmm.
on the anterior medial side,
mm-hmm.
about a half an inch to an inch, like below, if you pressed on the inside of your knee there.
Below the joint line?
Yes, below the joint line. I get, sometimes it's a sharp pain, sometimes it's a dull pain. If I walk, it doesn't seem to bother me, but as soon as I start to, and I'll tell you, the running is like kind of a sloppy looking jog.
Okay.
You know? And
all right.
Good shoes,
right.
And all of that. You know, I'm very aware of that stuff. Anyway,
what do you think, Lori?
What
do you think, Lori? I think you know what it is already.
Well, yeah, well, we've been passing notes back and forth as we often do. Not to cut you off, Shelley, but. You know, you really gave a big clue when you said, how were you running? An albatross? No. How were you?
She didn't say that.
She didn't say that. She said,
I use that Jeff Galloway system.
No. You said your running style.
Oh, I said my jogging is kind of a sloppy excuse. You know,
yes.
It's not
sloppy. That was just the visual that came into my head. Sorry. So one of the issues is when you're jogging, you need to have good mechanics and good control over your joints. So if you're sort of like slogging along, shuffling without really good stabilization through your pelvis and hips, controlling the position of your knee and feet as you run, you're overloading your lower extremities. So my guess is that you don't have enough glute weakness.
Enough glute strength.
And enough gluteal strength and control of your legs when you're walking and running to be efficient in your running gait. So if your goal is that Disney cruise or the Disney
5K,
10K next December, I would suggest you get into our running clinic and have them evaluate your running technique. They'll assess.
Can I come out to the UW? Can I come out to the? Do they do that at the kinesiology lab?
They do it.
These kind of pseudo ones. I'm not.
Yeah,
very
they do it at the Sports Medicine Center at Research Park, at the PT clinic. So if you're having right knee pain, you can call your doctor, get a referral, right knee pain, I'm running, and see someone who specializes in running in the Sports Medicine Center and have your running gait evaluated so that they can look at your alignment, your hips, your knees, your feet, your low back, at your flexibility, at your strength, and then at your running speed. And from there, put together a program that will keep you healthy so that you can complete your race.
Right. My guess is that pelvis and low back and her core isn't strong enough if she's had this back surgery that we need to control that base before we get the legs moving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The problem is you don't have a stable base of support, what Jill said. I'll interpret for you. You don't have a stable base of support through your low back and pelvis to support your legs.
Hey, excellent information. You know I can always count on you.
Thanks so
much for
calling.
Excellent.
It's great to hear you. It's nice to hear your voice, Shelley. Take care.
Now, you were talking about the running clinic. Is that something that people pay for? Is it insurance or?
That's a really good question. Usually they come in through physical therapy.
Okay.
And the physical therapist there can tell you if insurance covers that analysis. I'm not sure right now if they do.
I don't know either, but it's pretty quick. They don't, it's not very labor intensive.
Right.
The cost
it wouldn't be that much. It'd be like the swimming evaluation. And I know they've tried to work with that with the insurance carriers to get those analyses covered. So I can't tell you exactly where they're at.
Okay, but talk to a physical therapist.
Yeah, they can tell you there.
All right. Let's go to Connie and Shawno real quick. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I say, I think Shelley might have covered my question,
but I have
an opposite problem. It's my left knee, and it's not from running. It's from driving. I do sales on the road, and it's sounds like my knee pain is somewhat similar to your previous caller. I've had it going on a couple years where I've had orthopedic look at it. He's done some injections with the cortisone, and then I've done a lot of dry needling after that. Huh. And a lot of relief from the dry needling. And
did you do any strengthening?
Well, she gives me a couple exercises that are more stretch than strengthen, I think, you know.
I would look at also the position in your car. Has somebody looked at your posture and position when you're driving? And do you drive a stick shift or an automatic?
Automatic.
Okay.
Because it's interesting that it's your left knee. It's not the one that you're moving back and forth for the brake. So you don't sprain your ACL with your leg resting MCL. In your car. Yeah, she said MCL.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't sprain your MCL sitting in a car. So that's why I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah. I can't tell you anything that I've ever done specifically. It just kind of came overnight, started hurting. I did have the back surgery years ago. And after that, I've had coldness in my thighs, and I had a horrible time getting going again after my back surgery, even walking.
Huh. I wonder if it's referred from
your
back.
It could be referred from your back. It could also be a saphenous nerve.
It could be a
saphenous nerve where it comes out on the inside of your thigh and innervates the inside of your knee. Sometimes it's a saphenous.
Right. I'd see a PT and ask about the saphenous nerve.
Ask about the saphenous nerve or referred from your back.
Yeah. Okay, you got that, Connie? Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate that. We've been talking with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. We'll be back right after the news. Glad to have you along with us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and they're with us today to answer your questions about physical therapy, so give us a call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And of course, you can post on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show. And Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R, because lots of people ask. We did have somebody email earlier, Lindsay from Monroe. She asked what she can do to strengthen her ankle after a sprain. And she also asked if sprains can cause long-lasting problems. It's not causing her problems right now, but she doesn't feel that it's 100% stable. She's a marathon runner and wondering how she can avoid ankle problems for future races.
Well, if you think about marathons, you think about how many times you land on that foot and push off again. So to answer her question, if it can cause long-lasting problems, yes, they can. So if it's what you would call a garden variety outside of your ankle or lateral ankle sprain, those usually heal fairly uneventfully if it's a mild sprain. If it's a more severe sprain, then it can cause ongoing instability called chronic ankle instability. and that is a significant issue for people. So if Lindsay hasn't gone to physical therapy, I would have her go. And she should only need a couple of visits for someone to examine her ankle, see how her laxity or instability is compared to her other side. They would do some strength tests. They would do some balance tests to see how well she can balance on that ankle. She should be able to balance equally on both sides with her eyes shut for the same amount of time. And then she should be doing some single leg balance. She should be doing some strengthening exercises using body weight or resistive bands and so on. There's a number of things to be done.
Right. And what we do know is that the incidence of making that first time ankle sprain a recurrent ankle sprain is pretty high. So we don't want her to be that person who gets the recurrent ankle sprains who ends up with the chronic ankle instability. So like Lori said, a couple of visits would probably be all she needs.
Okay, awesome. Thank you for letting us know about that, Lindsay. Let's go back to the phones. Daniel and Toma, what do you have for us today?
Well, I had a couple problems. I had a knee operation on December 23rd, and it never sent me to physical therapy, but I've been doing it myself. And I feel like, I need to get stronger, I'm a little bit older than most people, and I still exercise. I've been doing those cross-country stepping for as long as I can go, like 40 minutes a day.
What kind of surgery did you have on your knee?
They did none. They got done. I had the operation on the 23rd, and I told him I could walk on the 27th. I was back at work on the 28th, and he never had recommended any physical therapy.
What surgery did you have done?
What the surgery?
Oh, they just had the meniscus was torn, six spots. I played softball all summer, even though it was torn, six spots. And he said I had a flap from childhood, and he said behind my fibula bone was all worn out. I was in the Marine Corps and all that stuff.
Sure. Okay.
And then I never had knee problems, and I was just walking along, and I'll say it just hurt.
Okay. So what are you doing now? You're back at work, and is your knee doing well?
No, I'm back at work. The only problem I have is if I hit like a gopher hole, then it seems like it'll hurt, like if I lose my balance.
Yeah.
So I figured it's not healed all the way, but the reason I called was my neck problems.
Okay.
I flipped the pickup truck on top of my head.
Well, geez, that's going to be tough. That's going to be tough on your neck, man.
Yeah,
It was an accident. The truck flipped on top of me. My dog was underneath. I thought my dog was underneath the truck, so I picked the truck off the ground and flipped it over off my neck, and then flipped it over to get my dog out. Which happened to jump off the truck, and he ran away.
Oh, nice!
Gosh! And then they never gave me no physical therapy, but they said I pulled all my muscles.
Yeah,
And I had X-rays on. They said everything's straight on it.
Good.
But every day that I drive semis, I drive trucks, I have pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a while it was a thrive, but now it's more like a pressure pain. But they said there's nothing. I've gone to chiropractors. I've gone everywhere. And it's been going on since 1993, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I'm into natural herbs, and I take herbs every day, vitamins every day.
All right.
They say that's why I heal so fast.
Indeed.
Okay, Dan.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dan, boy, it sure sounds like you've done a really good job taking care of yourself. I would really strongly urge you to keep up the exercise that you've been doing, the cross-country ski legs. That's going to be great for your knee, trying to stay physically active. You know, in terms of your neck, trying to stay as strong as possible. So, you know, if you did any weightlifting with your arms, you know, below shoulder height, that would be great for your neck. If you just took your hand and put it, for example, along the side of your head and tried to push your head into your hand isometrically, and hold that for 5 or 6 seconds and do that each direction, forward, back, and each side a couple times a day to help keep your neck muscles strong. Keep turning it side to side every day so you keep your motion up. You know, I think you're probably going to turn out okay with this, just keeping yourself healthy.
It's the difficulty with driving a truck is the static posture and the vibration.
And the vibration is
so
not great.
Those are things that we can't fix.
Yep, so moving around as much as you can.
All right. Well, good
luck,
Daniel.
That's going to be the ticket.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Angie in Madison. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
What's going on with you?
Well, I'm 72, and at Christmas, the day before Christmas, I slipped on the stair and came down and sat on my foot, on my left foot. So I hyperextended that knee, and I literally squashed it. I couldn't use it for quite a while, but I wouldn't go to EMTs because I figured they need to be home at Christmas. I should have. So I waited a few weeks. I saw finally a orthopedic person, and this person took X-rays, and there was an ultrasound. MRI. MRI, and she said it's a torn medial meniscus with a piece floating around, but that's not my problem. My problem is I have arthritis. This is what she said.
Right.
But I never had arthritis pain on the 22nd. I only had it on the 23rd. Since then, I keep on limping around. I haven't been able to get to an orthopedist now until next week. And her only solution with this woman, this first orthopedist, was I'll have to have a knee replacement. And it seems extreme when they haven't even addressed the torn meniscus. And I wanted your opinion on that.
Well, it's hard to see without the x-rays and the imaging, but it sounds to me like until you had this episode, you were doing quite well. So
you had a
macro trauma or a big trauma that kind of stirred the pot. So the question is, could you get by with either a conservative therapy? Because it sounds like you haven't had any physical therapy at all, and there's more and more research showing that we don't need to be doing all these meniscectomies. So my first line of defense would be seeing a physical therapist and seeing how we do with something like that.
Yep. Well, I did see one, and it caused so much pain that I would have it in the morning when my knee was not swelled. My leg is also swelled.
Okay.
And when I would do it in the morning, when it was least swollen, I had the most motion. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it was so excruciating, I used the wheelchair to get around it. So my regular doctor just said, cut the therapy. There's something else going on here.
Okay. Okay. Well, again, it's hard to say without seeing your x-rays. So I'm not sure what the physical therapist was having you do. If you were seeing me, the first thing I would do is, do you have a cane or a walker?
I'm using a cane almost all the time just because the knee just...
Right. And do you walk normally with a cane?
Close, but only in the morning.
Okay. And then by the late afternoon, it's too sore?
It swells and it doesn't want to bend.
Okay. And it doesn't want to bend.
Yeah.
All right. And then, you know, we could think about a pool to see if you can unload and get any traction on recovering from this in a pool where the hydrostatic pressure and the unweighting allow you to move. So, you know, there's the meniscus tear. I don't know. I think what I hear with your discomfort with this is maybe you should think about getting a second opinion.
I agree.
From another orthopedic
which
person.
She said she's going to do. I think that's what she said. She has another.
I have that.
Yeah, for another one.
Perfect.
That's where I would go next. And then in the meantime, I would try to keep my leg as strong as possible and try to walk as normally as possible. And if that means using a walker, then a walker. A cane can only offload about 20% of your body weight. So if you are not walking normally and you're having enough pain in the afternoon where you have to sit in a wheelchair, you need a different assistive device besides a cane. And I would probably go with a walker so you can unload your knee a little bit more.
Right.
So ordinary walking is not going to exacerbate it any more.
Well, it's
just
there.
Because I can walk normally until about noon.
Yeah. So there's a sweet spot of the right amount of walking. So you can walk some, but walking and then getting your weight off of it again, and then walking and getting your weight off of it. So it's not that you can walk forever on it, but it is still aggravated and irritated, it sounds like.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much for your phone call, Angie. Let's go to Jim in Elkader, Iowa. Hi, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
What's going on?
I have a question about my 5-year-old grandson. Now, I know that I'm just the grandpa. Okay.
But you're from Iowa, so
that's
are we,
right.
So we like you.
Elkader.
Elkader.
Is that how that's pronounced?
Yeah. Yes, Elkader.
Elkader.
My daughter and her husband, they really enjoy running. They run regularly and frequently and occasionally half marathons, and I'm happy that they do. Their 5-year-old son, he also enjoys running. He frequently runs every day after kindergarten. He runs a mile. He is now up to entering races, 2-mile and 4-mile races. And on the one hand, I'm really happy about it, but, you know, I'm the grandpa. So,
right. You
know, I think, gee, are we looking at potential issues down the road, no pun intended, where he might be looking at some injuries that, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. There's a saying by a famous physician.
George Sheehan said, no child ever got hurt Like, no horse
ever ran itself to death until there was a rider on its back. And likewise, no child never got hurt until there was some sort of structure to the activity.
Yeah.
George.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the take-home message from that is, you know, we really prefer that it be relatively non-structured, that it be free play.
Self-limited,
not limited by competition or distance, because as soon as you give it structure and there's another child running against me, it becomes the self-limitation kind of goes out the window.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that makes sense. So
I can't believe you remember that quote.
I love that quote. I thought of it at the beginning of the show. I was going to say it, but you took it right away. Perfect.
Sorry.
So at what age would structure be appropriate?
Boy, you just opened Pandora's box. Boy, you Iowa people are so smart.
I know, they are. Well done. You know, we don't really have data on that at this point, but I would say limiting competitive runs to a mile up until, I would say, 8 to 10.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, somewhere in the 8 to 10 range. Mm-hmm. I think there is data to support that, or at least recommendations from organizations that are wiser than I, such as the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Right. And there's the pediatricians who are sports medicine fellowship trained. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks who really are the experts in this area, and I'm not sure where your grandson lives, but seeing a your grandson's pediatrician, if he's going to be active like this, should really have some good knowledge about activity and competition and structure to competition.
Yeah.
That'd be an important thing to consider.
Okay. Great information there for you, Jim. Thank you.
Good
for
luck
calling.
With that. I know how grandpa's
right.
Ranked.
Yeah. Right.
And I think we know now that Lori and Jill are from Iowa.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's go to Ann from Monona. Hi, Ann. What's going on?
Hi, I have called to find out what pseudo-gout is. Is it a form of rheumatoid arthritis? And exactly what is, you know, in some detail, rheumatoid arthritis and what causes it?
Well, I'll start with rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease.
Right.
It's different from osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis is a wear and tear kind of arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis is a systemic autoimmune disease, and so people with rheumatoid arthritis have problems with multiple joints. It isn't just wear and tear, but it's a systemic problem with a systemic intervention, and they get infusion therapies and different kinds of interventions that address it from a systemic point of view as compared to a single joint where you get injections and so on at a single joint. So Jill was going to talk about pseudogout.
So pseudogout is not a rheumatoid arthritis. It belongs in the inflammatory arthritis family. And gout is caused by excessive
crystalline formation
in the urine.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So the classic place we see gout...
Big toe.
...is the big toe. And it's the disease or the condition. It's not a disease. It's a condition of King Arthur.
Oh, King Arthur?
Yes.
Are you going to get a history lesson?
Sure. No, because of red meat.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the diet.
Yeah, so, they look at it as a diet issue.
Dietary issue with red
meat. So dietary counseling is part of it, along with treatment for the gout. And people tend to get flares of their gout if they've been eating a lot of rich food.
Right. Hence King Arthur.
So what is pseudo-gout then? Is it this?
So pseudo-gout is a derivative of it.
Yeah,
I'm not
okay.
sure if
first
it's...
First cousin.
It's right. It's,
yeah.
it's,
so it's like it, but
it's very similar to it, and I think the treatment and management is very similar as well. Kind of falls in that category. I don't know if the urinalysis is a little different, something like that, that doesn't make it exactly be diagnosed as gout, but treatment is in essence the same.
Okay. Did that answer your question, Ann?
If you're a vegetarian, you know, I this is a knee problem, and you know, it's the inside of the left knee, and so painful that no other symptoms, but you know, just so painful that walking was totally impossible.
And someone diagnosed you with pseudogout?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I also have an autoimmune disease.
Okay.
And so maybe this is a form of, you know, I understood I'm a vegetarian, and so my diet really is very rich.
Correct.
And another time I had a diagnosis without anyone actually touching a toe, and I went to a rheumatologist who said that that was not gout, but pseudo-gout, and I'm still unclear, you know, what causes pseudo-gout.
Well, maybe pseudo-gout is a gout-like symptom in the autoimmune family.
Right.
Or so people, it's not,
maybe. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or because you have this autoimmune condition, it manifests.
That it manifests like gout, but it's not true gout.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
Thank you, Anne.
Good luck with that.
Let's go to Carolyn in Eau Claire. Hi, Carolyn. What's going on with you?
Hi. Well, I'm going to ask you a question you probably can't answer.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for the warning.
I'm so impressed with your knowledge. And I am 67 now, just about 68. And I take really good care of myself. I do sort of gentle aerobic exercise, and I do yoga 3 times a week. And when I was about 53, I had double knee replacements. Mm. I had severe arthritis at the time, and it was, my knees were in terrible shape. And here's my question. That's a while back, and I'm wondering how successful are second knee replacements? Because I got to tell you, in every way, I'm really healthy. I wish I could take off about 10 pounds.
Don't we all?
Yep. Yeah, I'm really terrified that I'm going to have second knee replacements, and I will not be ambulatory anymore.
Oh. Well, as the second let me rephrase it. So your first total knee replacement was done 12 years ago? I can't do math.
Yeah,
almost 15.
Something like that.
14. Okay. 14.
Okay.
Yeah, great. I mean, they feel great, but I know one of these days I'm going to have to pay the piper.
Well, that's a great question. So your question is basically how long, what's the longevity of total knee replacements? And I can tell you that it has gone up with time.
Right. And, I expect you had a cement.
Were you cemented?
Yeah. So that's...
That makes revisions very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. But probably not as difficult as a biologic ingrowth.
Correct.
So, I would say keep taking care of yourself.
Exactly.
So don't worry about it. Don't worry about what's going to come. What's going to come is going to come. And what you can't control that. What you control is your body weight, your activity level, your strength, your diet, the surfaces you stand and walk on and things like that. Those are the things you can control. You can't control the materials in your knee. So would I play basketball? No. If I'm walking, would I walk on pavement? No. I'd walk on a trail. I would do strengthening exercises to keep my core and my glutes strong so I can offload those joints as much as possible. And
maintaining your flexibility, which you're doing with yoga.
Yeah. And all
you're
those,
doing a lot of right stuff.
Yeah. And all those things are great. And if at some point it does come to a revision, you will be in the best position you can be in to get that done and be successful.
And the other thing is, the longer you can put it off, the better research we have, the more long-term outcomes we have, the improved technology we have. So it's the technology and research in this area is growing by leaps and bounds because there are so many people having them because of the aging baby boomers.
Yeah.
So the longer you can stave off, the more information you'll have going into that. So you're doing everything right.
Yep.
So if someone was to get it right now, how long could they expect on average?
The life expectancy of a total knee these days? 20?
Probably 20 years.
20 years. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing.
Yes.
So it really has improved.
It's improved dramatically.
Yeah.
And
people
are living longer. And so that's there's always that consideration is people, they're expecting the knees, we need to expect more out of these knees because they're living long. People are living longer.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for all of your wonderful advice, ladies. We've been talking with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW Madison. Thanks to Lexi Rode for on-air production and to Michelle Good for technical direction. Remember, tomorrow at this time, our tax expert will be back with us, and we're going to be taking a look at some unusual tax situations, and of course, she's going to be taking your calls. Hope you can join us starting at 11 o'clock. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network. Our physical therapy experts will be back again with us next month, so please call back. Stay with us. There's more to come.